Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
This is a HeadGum Podcast.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy,
and you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Too Scary, Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I am too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared to watch scary movies.
I'm Sammy, and I love watching scary movies, and so I watch them so that you don't have to. And we've got a fun one today. It's going to be a fun ride or something along those lines. But if you want to jump straight to the recap, we have timestamps in the episode description, because first, I got to know if anything scary happened to us this week.
So what I'm going to say will be extra scary because there's actual wind blowing through this house right now in such a spooky way. I don't know if you guys can hear it. I feel like the audio will probably pick it up. It sounds like, in the background. And I can only imagine it's the ghost of Paul Walker is with us right now.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Spoiler alert. He's here. So the listeners came in strong for me with lunch recommendations. I put out a call. Guys really responded and it helped me so much. I have so many ideas for lunch now. I don't know what I would do without you. So I have an equally stupid thing to ask. It's not stupid, but you know. Okay. Socks.
This is interesting.
Yeah.
I want to talk about socks because
I love this.
I have so many fucking socks. I'm looking at this wire shelf I bought literally just for my fucking socks, and it's filled with them, and I hate them. I hate every single sock that's in there. It's overstuffed.
Yes.
I can barely open the drawers.
But yes, I have so many, my sock drawer is so full and I never feel like I have the socks that I need.
There's a real hierarchy to socks.
But I still keep all those socks I don't need. Like, what am I doing with all these socks I hate?
And I have so many times attempted to sit down and be like, okay, we are going to be cold hearted about this. We are throwing out these socks. We are throwing them out. We're starting fresh. I do it. I don't even make a dent. I don't even know what is going through my head. I keep them. I just keep them. And I think this is a perfectly good sock. I cannot throw this sock away, but I hate them. I hate all of them. So is there like a strategy? Is there a formula? Do I need a certain amount of wool socks, a certain amount of cotton socks, a certain amount of colored socks? Is there someone out there who's doing this research for me who can tell me where to buy them? Who can tell me how many I really need realistically in my life? Because like I have too many. I hate them. I just don't know what to do. And also, how do you store them? Where do you guys keep your socks?
It is very funny. I recently, a pair of socks that I really hate finally got holes in them. And I was like, thank God I can like finally throw them away. Like, why did I feel the need to hang on to them?
We have no control over our socks. They control us. They decide. It's hard. Socks are hard. You're right. There is a hierarchy of socks. And it's like, why couldn't I know which socks I have are the good, like the socks I like. And why can't all my socks be socks I like? Well, because I'm not in control. The socks are.
Where do you guys keep your socks?
In a sock drawer.
I have a drawer.
But which do you have like a dresser and one whole drawer is devoted to socks? Is that?
I've got socks, underwears, and bras in one drawer. And it is a pretty full drawer. And most of the stuff in there, I do hate it. Across the board, underwear, socks, and bras. There's a lot that I hate in all of those.
Yeah. I'd have socks and sports bras and tights.
Oh, tights.
And it's full to the brim.
Yeah.
We could have a whole other conversation about tights. I mean, we will, but I just can't be now. Because I also...
We will.
We'll get there.
I don't know what to do. I thought about for Tim's birthday. I thought about his birthday present being throwing out all his socks. Because I know, feels the same way I do. And I think he would have like been really honestly thrilled for that to have happened. But I couldn't bear it. I couldn't see him go in the trash.
Would it make you feel better to take him to a clothing recycling place like H&M does clothing drop off?
You can
take clothes, nasty old ratty clothes that then they just like recycle into new material. I'm feeling inspired. I think I'm going to do this because I hate so many things in that drawer.
It's a dark place. Okay, good. I'm glad we're on the same page about this. That makes me feel better.
Great.
Emily, what about you? Anything scary?
Well, first, I just want a little update. The bird that lives in our lemon tree had her babies, and we've got two little baby birds. So far, so good. So, fingers crossed.
Phew.
That's really exciting. I was kind of worried. I was worried for Cynthia.
We were worried for Cynthia, too. Oh, that's her name, by the way, Cynthia. I don't remember if I said that last week. But so far, we were starting to feel like, is she doing it right? We're like, she's just sitting there all the time. I haven't seen any eggs. I don't know what's going on. Like, maybe she doesn't know what she's doing. And then, wow, babies. So, I'm really happy for her.
Congrats,
Cynthia. I mean, the scary thing, you guys know, I had a little too much to drink last night. You know, just fine. It happens. And we have to record the podcast today. And sometimes, I'll be honest, you guys, sometimes one of us can't make it because we had a little too much to drink the night before. Because it's record this podcast on Sunday mornings. It happens. But I was like, I'm not missing it today. And I went, and for the second time in my life, I went and got an IV drip for my hangover. And I guess what's scary is that I would do it every time. Like, I'm like, I have found a cure to feeling hungover. I am such a baby. I hate feeling sick. You can also do it when you're sick, when you have a cold, sorts of stuff, man. And truly, I would take a shot every single day of my life if it meant I was never going to get a cold. Like, I would do that. Like, I hate feeling even the tiniest bit under the weather.
Yeah.
And I it's like not great for me that I know that I can just go and do this. I mean, I'll never intentionally be hungover so that like, no, it doesn't make me feel like there's no consequences, but it's not an inexpensive thing to do.
No.
But you know what? Sometimes you got to get your shit together and be ready to record a podcast.
Also, any tax professionals out there, let us know if we can write that off.
Can I write it off? I was doing it for work. I had to get it for work.
A medical expense for work.
It's a it honestly is.
What are the vitamins that are in the drip?
I feel like there's all different kinds to choose from.
There's all different kinds to choose from. Usually in the like hangover one, they give you some Zofran. They give you some heartburn. They give you some, I think some like painkillery, but then it's like vitamin B, electrolytes.
Oh, so nice.
So here's what else my deranged brain thinks is like, this is like a really healthy thing for me to do.
That's good for you.
Because, because not only do I hate feeling hungover, it's like this will like give back to my body what I'm missing. Yeah. And I am obsessed with that. I'm like, I actually have to do this for my body. Like, it's like sad and bad to my body to not do it. So
it's a flawless logic. I don't see any holes.
There's no holes. Well, there's one hole where they put the shot in. I'll say I went to a place to do it this time. Great place. You know, the people who do it are nurses. Lovely nurses. I love nurses. They're my favorite medical professionals. And one time I had a lady come to my house, and that was also great. So you got a lot of options. I'm just saying. Mm-hmm. Like, it's nobody, you know, we don't want to poison ourselves. Like, that's no good. But should you find yourself in that position, you could explore this. Just saying.
I'm not even hungover. For work purposes. I wish I had a drip right now.
Yeah.
Right. You can truly get them whenever.
Didn't Gwyneth Paltrow come under like serious fire for saying that she got some kind of insane drip every day? She said that she was getting some vitamins.
That sounds right.
No one had ever heard of before. And everyone was like, we need to stop getting health advice from Gwyneth Paltrow.
I mean, that's true.
I feel like we stopped once she was putting things in her vagina, right? Wasn't that when everyone kind of decided not to listen to her medical advice?
So. I guess so. Sammy, tell us.
Tell us.
About you.
Well, I wanted to say real quick, a thank you to everyone who watched the program on Netflix. It went to number one,
yeah, baby,
in streaming, number three globally. Insane.
That's crazy. Think about how many things are on Netflix and how it was number one out of all of them.
It was really wild. I've never edited anything that people really watched. So it's a kind of a crazy feeling. But then it's actually led to them opening an investigation into Wally.
Hell yes.
And so really best case scenario here. This is like the goal of the doc series. So TBD where that goes, but very cool that happened. And so, yeah, thank you to everyone who watched it. And if you haven't watched it, check it out. The program on Netflix, Cons, Cults, and Kidnapping. But I had a medical thing as well that you reminded me of, which is that I have a medication for ulcerative colitis that's like annoyingly expensive through my insurance. And so I tried to get it through Mark Cuban's Cost Plus Drugs Company.
Oh my god! You told me that he had a. I cannot believe this is a real thing. We are living in a dystopia.
It's so bad.
Go on.
And so I was just shaken by the fact that I was turning to a billionaire for help. But it turns out that it was even more expensive through his company. Probably not more expensive than if I had no insurance, but I thought it was going to be cheaper than my insurance, and it was not. But I had to go back and forth between my doctor and my insurance and the company like four times before I finally figured it out. And insurance stuff makes me so mad, and it's so scary, and I hate it so much.
Ugh, it's so awful.
Ended up just sticking with what I already was doing. And so a big old waste of time. Thanks a lot, Mark Cuban.
Yeah, thanks, Mark.
So he's got some making up to do.
Mark, if you're listening.
Mark.
Make the drugs cheaper, Mark.
Make them even cheaper. It's still not cheap enough.
It's not cheap enough for us. Maybe for you, Mark, but come on.
But something else scary I did this week was watch a scary movie, as I do every week. Never gets old. God, I love them.
Oh, thank God.
And this week's movie was Joyride. It came out in 2001, directed by John Dahl, written by Clayton Tarver and J.J. Abrams, starring Paul Walker, Steve Zahn, and Lily Sobieski, and is available to rent on Amazon. And we have a guest with us today. Emily, tell us who's with us here.
I'm going to tell us. It's the reason I had to get my ass to the IV clinic and get ready to do this podcast, because I'm so excited for our guest this week. He's a director, a dear friend, a lover of movies, and host of Physical Therapy, a movie podcast. Welcome to the podcast, Kurt Schmidt.
Hello. This Woo-hoo! Is an honor. Thank you very much, guys.
Wow. The honor is all ours. And I am just going to go ahead and say real quick that your name is Kurt, but that is not what I call you. Your nickname in our friend group is Marty, and it feels insane to call you Kurt. And so I won't be doing it. And to all the listeners who hear me calling you Marty, that it's still you that I'm talking to.
Yep.
But I can't do it. So sorry if that's confusing, but hey, Marty, I'm so glad you're here.
I have to say that I have heard so much about you, and this is the very first time I've ever heard that your real name is Kurt.
Many people don't know that. Yeah.
I had no idea. Can you explain the nickname, or is it too complicated?
When I first moved to LA, I lived in Joel's garage in Culver City. And I had never met Joel or a couple of our other roommates. And I introduced myself as Kurt, left the room for a while, came back, and our roommate James asked me, he said, "What was your name again? Carl?" And I said, "No, it's Kurt." And he was like, "Oh, yeah, I knew it was something with a K, Kmart." And so they called me Kmart for months. And then Kmart turned into Carl Martin, which turned into Marty, which turned briefly into Smarty Marty, and then Smarty Marty's Farty Party, and then
great.
And then back to Marty. So I'll take Marty.
Love it.
What a journey.
Well, Marty, did anything scary happen to you this week?
Can my answer be launching a podcast for the first time?
It absolutely can. That is a scary thing.
It was scary.
We're all familiar with that feeling.
Sammy, you've been such a beacon for me launching a show. Thank you for all your help.
It's been my absolute pleasure. I love to feel like the endless research I have done can help others.
It really did. It saved me a lot of time.
Wait, tell me about physical therapy. Tell me everything.
So Physical Therapy is a movie podcast, and it's inspired by the world of physical media. So we talk about movies primarily, but the movies we are talking about are inspired by recent reissues or new releases on Blu-ray or 4K. And I co-host it with my friends Sam and Bobby, and they are equally as obsessed and hopeless as I am.
Wait, I'm just realizing, are those DVDs next to you where you're recording?
Blu-rays, baby.
They're Blu-rays.
They're Blu-rays.
Oh. I've this whole time thought that they were books, and now I'm just adjusting my eyes. I'm realizing, no, it's a Blu-ray collection.
Full library of Blu-rays. Marty, how many Blu-rays do you have, roughly? There's boxes downstairs of alphabetized and numbered.
There's a spreadsheet.
They're very meticulously categorized. And
I'm going to say 700.
Damn.
Wow.
Marty is also
impressive.
Our friend with a home theater, and we have watched many a Blu-ray in there, and it's a real delight. the Marty Max.
The Marty Max is a special place.
It really is.
We should do Joyride at some point. We can give it some time. But Emily, I think you need to see this movie.
I was going to say,
okay, great.
I
love that.
Presume you have it. Blu-ray?
Oh, yeah. I have it right here.
Great.
Yeah.
I've never heard of this movie, but I got to say, I love the cast. Huge fan of the cast.
Great cast.
But before we get into this movie, I want to know about your personal relationship to scary movies. I know you're a big movie lover in general, but how do you feel about scary movies?
So honestly, scary movies are something I feel like I'm getting more and more into lately. I think they used to be something I would see the classics, but I would kind of avoid things that were gross or the kind of low budget stuff was not something I was very interested in growing up. But lately I've really cracked into like bad sequels and
Hellraiser 2
budget stuff.
I mean, it's a great sequel, but
I have a box set of the Hellraiser ones. I haven't seen the sequels yet, but I did watch nine Halloweens last year, and that was kind of the gateway drug for me, was the really bad Halloween sequels.
Nice.
H2O excluded.
The worst.
6.
Great.
The Paul Rudd one is the worst.
I did not know Paul Rudd was in it.
Me neither. Yeah.
Ever. That's very funny.
He plays the grown-up kid that Jamie Lee Curtis is babysitting in the original.
Oh.
Whoa.
That's fun.
Okay. Well, too bad it's bad.
But I love horror movies. I think they're kind of the best example of the format. Like, watching a horror movie is, you're so into it. It is viscerally engaging in a way that most other movies aren't. I think they're very special. I've come to really appreciate them.
Mm-hmm. Do you have a favorite horror movie?
Very special.
The Shining.
It's a really good one. Emily, is that your favorite? Or no, that's your scariest?
I think it's the scariest one that I've seen with mine own eyes.
Yeah.
Don't make me choose a favorite.
And Marty, what made you choose Joyride? Tell us about the first time you saw Joyride. Anything like that?
Okay, a young Marty is growing up in Minnesota. He's in eighth grade. And every Friday in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, there would be movie reviews.
Ooh.
And starting in probably like sixth grade, I became obsessed with reading the Friday paper because I was allowed to see some R-rated movies. If they didn't have sex, I could see them. And at this time, movie posters didn't usually tell you underneath the rating why it was rated, what it was rated. A lot of them do that now.
Right.
But in the St. Paul Pioneer Press, in the review, underneath how many stars they gave it, they would tell you who directed it, who starred in it, and then what it was rated and why, kind of in their own words.
Yep.
So I was always looking there first to be like, Mom, Dad, this only has violence. I can see it.
Yeah.
And it was rare that, okay, so the critic's name was Chris Hewitt. And it was fairly rare that he would ever give anything 4 stars. Like, I bet it happened 2-3 times a year, maybe. And it was usually, you know, things you'd expect to get 4 stars. But one Friday morning in early October of 2001, little Marty opened the paper and a film called Joyride got 4 stars.
Wow.
And so I was like, I have to see this. And at the time, I was 13, maybe. At the time, a megaplex near us that we'd see a lot of movies had a policy where your parents could purchase your R-rated ticket, but they didn't have to go with you. So my mom was already, you know, dropping us off everywhere because we were 13. And so she took me, my friend Peter Felian, and my buddy Pat Kramer, and we went to see Joyride, and it blew me away.
Wow.
4 stars.
4 stars.
I would have, yeah, 4 out of 4 stars. I should clarify that.
4 out of 4.
It deserves another one, in my opinion.
I will say this movie, yeah, it has a 74% on Rotten Tomatoes, 75% on Metacritic. That's like particularly high for Metacritic, and a 6.6 on IMDb, which is pretty standard stuff. But
yep.
People like this movie. This is a well-reviewed movie. Budget was $23 million, made $36.6 million.
Pretty good.
Not too shabby.
Pretty good. Mm-hmm.
It's maybe worth mentioning that this movie came out 3 weeks after 9/11. And I feel like it's a little underseen, I think. And that could be why.
I don't think I saw it in theaters, but I've definitely seen it before. And I have no idea when. I think it was in the years, you know, early 2000s, sometime on VHS, probably rented from Blockbuster. And I remember being very stressed by it. And I was still stressed by it upon a second viewing.
Ooh.
A real stressful movie.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Okay.
I have some trivia. It was a 2 year long production with reshoots, multiple endings. Marty's going to tell us more about that at the end of the recap, but sounds like a pretty crazy production. Like, maybe they didn't really know what the game plan was. And I read that they had a bunch of test screenings, and the problem was that everyone liked every version of it, so they didn't know, like, which one to go with. But fascinating. I just got personally curious about what Lily Sobieski is up to these days, so I did a little...
Thank you. I was going to ask that.
Poking around. She was really... Around this time, she was in a lot of stuff. This was peak Lily time, 2001.
Eyes Wide Shut, baby.
Yeah, yep.
Oh, yeah.
But she is now... she quit acting, obviously. Or maybe not obviously, but I haven't seen her in anything in a long time. So
it tracks.
And she... It works as an artist in New York, mother of two. Just
cool.
Her and her husband, I think, are both artists, and she does that now.
Great. I believe her father was a painter.
Well, I was looking at her Instagram. She's a good painter. So pretty cool. Good for her.
Yeah, I'm jealous. I wish I was a painter. I wish I had anyone who painted in my life.
It does seem like a really hard career path to flourish in.
Is she in a movie with Josh Hartnett in the 90s?
Yeah, she has to have been. Yeah. I can't think of what, but
the one where he's a virgin for not a virgin, celibate for 40 days.
40 days and 40 nights. I don't think she's
virgin
in that.
For 40 whole days.
A virgin.
And I just wanted to let you guys know that her brother, Robbie Sobieski, was on a season of The Bachelorette. Night one guy got sent home. He was a magician.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no. All of those things are so sad put together.
I really liked his vibe. I would have kept him on, but he didn't make the cut. And it was the season where there were two bachelorettes, so both of them decided they didn't want him around, so it's an extra burn. But
yeah, that sucks.
Oh my god, she's in Jungle to Jungle. Remember that movie?
Yeah.
Mimi Siku. A casting what if is that for the Paul Walker role, Tobey Maguire was considered. And that,
no, thank you.
And that's it.
That would have not been.
No, it would not have not have worked. That's all the trivia I got. So we will watch the trailer at the end, and that'll be available on our Patreon. But what do you guys say we get into this recap?
I can't wait.
Let's get into it.
I need to know.
I'm so excited.
Hell yeah. Let's do it.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they're feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good. And tonight, I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and five-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a five-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? This is such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes, so whether you're looking for vegetarian, family-friendly, low-carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready-to-eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary and use code too scary for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code too scary so they know I sent you.
All right, you guys, I'm here again to talk to you about Skims, except this time not about their underwear, this time about their t-shirts. Have you guys tried their t-shirts? Because I hadn't until recently, and holy shit, I have been on the quest to find the perfect t-shirt for my entire adult life. And little did I know, they were just hiding at skims.com. So I have their cotton jersey long sleeve t-shirt in kind of this like deep blue, gorgeous color. And it's a very form-fitting t-shirt that's extremely flattering. I've worn it over and over and over again since I got it. And it really holds up in the wash. You can just throw it in the washing machine, holds up, keeps its shape. The quality of the fabric is so good. I also have the boyfriend t-shirt. That one's so cozy, more relaxed. I just am obsessed with them. And now I want all of them. So I will slowly be amassing my collection of Skims t-shirts for the rest of my goddamn life. Anyway, so I really can't recommend them enough. Go to skims.com to shop them. And they're available in sizes extra, extra small to 4X. Plus, you get free shipping on orders over $75. And if you haven't yet, be sure to let them know that Too Scary Didn't Watch sent you. After you place your order, select podcast in the survey and select Too Scary Didn't Watch in the drop-down menu that follows.
My mom has had a pretty wild life, a lot of interesting stuff. She was in a couple popular bands in South Africa in the 80s. She's traveled all around the world, and she is so full of stories that I'm still finding out new things about her. So this Mother's Day, I know just what to get her. It's called Storyworth, and Storyworth helps you preserve those memories and stories from your mom or mother figure for years to come. Here's how it works. Each week, Storyworth emails your loved one a question. You can help choose the questions if you'd like. Some that I've asked my mom are, what was your first boss like? What were your favorite toys as a child? And all they need to do is respond to the email with a story. It can be long or short. They can even include pictures if they want. Sky's the limit, so you can enjoy their retelling of your favorite stories and new stories you've never heard before. After a year, Storyworth compiles all their stories into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book that you'll be able to share and revisit for generations to come. I love this. I love having these kinds of physical items, whether it's a journal or a photo book. I know we can have all this stuff on our phones now or the computer, but it's just not the same. Having something actually tangible is just the best. So give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift that you'll all cherish for years, Storyworth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/too-scary. That's storyworth.com/too-scary to save $10 on your first purchase.
The seasons are changing. We are starting to have warm days in Los Angeles. And if you're like me, every time the seasons change, I realize I actually hate every single thing I own and need to swap everything out. And that is a daunting task, but imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at unbeatable prices. Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach. Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50 for those places where it is still chilly, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, yes, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry. The best part, all Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us. And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes, so you can feel great about the items that you are purchasing. For example, I purchased a pair of clogs. They are so comfortable. I have lusted after a pair of suede clogs for so long. They're pricey other places, and I just could never justify it for shoes that I'm basically treating like outdoor slippers. And I got a pair at Quince. They are amazing. I truly love them. So if you too would like to be walking around in gorgeous pieces that make you feel happy and comfortable at a price that you can feel good about, go to Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/too scary for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns. That's quince.com/too scary to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/too scary.
Joyride opens with some spooky, like, VHS camera footage of CB radios, and that's the opening credits, and there's scary music underneath. It kind of sets the tone. You hear some voices, some CB truckers, some Paul Walker on the phone, some Lily on the phone. Then we open on Paul Walker's dorm room. It's late at night. The first thing you hear is Lily's voice. And she says, "I never thought freshman year would go so fast." So summer's upon us. They are old high school just friends. And it's very clear that Paul Walker loves her.
Wow.
But she,
I love this already. I gotta say, it's a rom-com. It's a rom-com. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
If not for the opening credits, this, like, the first half an hour of this movie is kind of a rom-com.
Yeah,
and one could argue it might be better if they didn't have that opening credits to really just pull the rug out from under you. So Lily has just broken up with her boyfriend, and Paul is about to get on an airplane and go home to New Jersey for the summer, where they're both from. And she says to him, "You know, I just wish I could take my time and decompress and drive home. If only I had a car." And Paul pulls out his plane ticket, and printed big and large in the center of it says "ticket refundable,"
which is not a thing. I feel like
it's not. I don't think
not
so.
Not a thing.
And so Paul says, "I have a car."
Whoa, Paul! I want Paul Walker to be in love with me so badly. God damn it!
He's also talking so loud on the phone to Lily Sobieski, and his poor roommate is like, "Dude, it's 3 a.m." I'm like, yeah, that's
final tomorrow.
Really fucking rude, Paul. Come on.
Really rude.
And what does he do?
He gives,
do you remember?
Yeah, he gives him headphones. He, like, throws
like a CD player at him to listen to.
Very rude.
Bad roommate.
So Paul says, "I have a car." And then cut to Paul buying a used car and driving across.
He didn't even have a car.
He is lying. Yeah, he was lying. So cut to Paul buying a car, driving across the country. He's at Berkeley, I should say, for school. And he's driving through, like, Nevada on his way to pick her up in Boulder. And he calls home, and his mom is distracted when she talks to him. And he says, "What's the matter?" And she says, "Ugh, it's your brother again. He's in jail." And
I did kind of note that the voice actress playing the mom seemed poorly cast. A voice actor,
she seems too young.
It's like really young and kind of a sexy voice. Mm-hmm. And
weird.
I just felt like confused. It's not often that a voice,
do we ever see her, or is it the voice? That's weird.
But not often.
But she's probably sexy if Paul Walker is her son, right?
True.
But
she's probably sexy. Young. That's probably what the casting directors were thinking. I mean, she has to sound sexy.
Mm-hmm. Also, it's so weird to me, these three people, Steve Zahn, Paul Walker, and Lily Sobieski, I just feel like they're 35. So picturing them as being 18, I'm like, they're freshmen in college. Get over it. Get over it.
Yeah.
Was this the same year as The Fast and the Furious?
I think it might have been, or at least.
Yeah, I think so. 2001?
Yep, it is. So.
Wow, big year for Paul Walker in Cars.
Does it say what month that was? Was it before? Probably, right?
The Fast and
Furious. He's like, I'll only work if I can be in a car the whole time.
He's definitely in a car for a lot of this movie. Yes, this was before, or Fast and Furious was before June 2001.
Okay.
Big year for Paul.
It's very strange to imagine a universe where there's only one Fast and the Furious movie, and it's that first one.
That would be crazy.
Thank God that's not the world we live in.
Thank God.
Thank God. Thank God.
So he decides to go pick up his brother from jail, go something like 200 miles out of his way. It's clear he doesn't have a great relationship with his brother. He hasn't seen him in a long time, but he's driving sort of in that direction and feels, I guess, like he can go help him out. Arrives at the jail and picks him up.
Enter Steve Zahn.
Enter Steve Zahn, who, amazing. I don't know why, but in this movie, I was like, I want to see him and Daniel Radcliffe in a movie together. They have like...
Oh. That's a fun energy match, yeah.
They both have like similarly shaped faces. Mm-hmm. They could play relatives, yeah. I think.
Square and, heads.
Mm-hmm, a very square shaped head and like big eyes. And I just want to see, I want to see them. I think they'd make a good duo. So,
and like a frantic energy.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Just throwing that out there.
Great. Cool. Okay. So cool. Lily is waiting patiently for Paul.
Yeah. And he scoops up his brother and is going to drop him off in Denver, right? On the way to Boulder.
That's a good question. I think Steve Zahn just seems to sort of just be like, this plan sounds great. I'm coming.
Yeah.
Cool.
And then they get in a fight kind in the car. And for some reason, all I wrote down was like Paul Walker sort of crashing his car to teach him a lesson. He like gets so mad that he swerves off the road. Is he like taunting him about Lily Sobieski? He's like, ooh, you love her.
Exactly. Yeah.
And Paul Walker essentially crashes his own car as a way to be like, shut up, which is an interesting way to teach your brother a lesson. But.
Because it's not like public knowledge that Paul loves her. Like, we know he loves her, but he's never really said that out loud, I don't think.
Yeah. So, but now they have to go to a car repair shop and they get a CB radio installed.
I think the reasoning for that is sort of mostly to avoid cops and be able to speed.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
So they can like check in with truckers, you know, along the route they're on to see when the next cop's going to be.
Interesting.
Do we know why Steve Zahn was in jail?
Drunk and disorderly.
Oh, okay. Got it.
Light stuff. Nothing, you know, nothing to make you dislike him.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. On the CB radio, we hear some trucker speaking who sounds a lot like Buffalo Bill. Because it is the actor Ted Levine.
Uncredited, right?
Yeah. Such a recognizable voice. And I don't really remember this part. Well, how do they kind of first start talking?
A trucker brings up the weather and then Ted Levine's voice comes in and he starts talking about how much it's going to rain that night and how he loves the rain because it keeps everyone inside.
Mm-hmm.
And so then Paul Walker, I think, says, like, what's this guy's deal?
Mm.
And so Steve Zahn and Paul Walker pretend to be two truckers. Steve Zahn is playing someone named Black Sheep. And Paul Walker is playing a woman named Candy Cane.
Yeah, Steve Zahn is like eggs Paul Walker on to make up a character to kind of prank this guy. So Paul Walker's talking like this and saying, well, hi there. What's your name, handsome? Type of thing.
It's so funny. It's like when someone does that, you're like, that's a fake voice. That's someone doing a fake voice.
Yes.
So Black Sheep and Candy Cane make plans to meet up. And then Black Sheep sort of signs off and they wait a second. And there's great shots, really tight shots of like the vocal level meter on the CB radio.
Yes.
And that's like what you're seeing when you're hearing Ted Levine talk, is these really tight shots. And so they're waiting and you're looking at this meter and it's not doing anything. And then you hear Ted Levine after a second go, "Come in, Candy Cane." And so then Paul Walker as Candy Cane starts talking to Ted Levine's voice, who we hear, who we learn is named Rusty Nail.
After they've kind of flirted with him a bit, saying like, "Oh, you sound handsome, Rusty Nail." It's so obviously a prank. It's very funny. But Rusty Nail's fucking eating it up and he's so horny for Candy Cane, you can tell.
They basically have like CB sex until they lose signal, essentially.
Oh,
and they're
yes.
planning to reveal that Paul's a man halfway through to prank him, but they don't get a chance.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
So they stop at a hotel for the night, pull into a handicapped parking spot. Paul Walker says, "Man, park somewhere else. There's so many spots open." He says, "Dude, don't worry, I'm gonna gimp it." And then walks in. Real rough stuff there.
Hasn't aged great.
Yeah.
Also, that's not how it works. You need a handicap sign in your car.
Yes. So
weird.
There's always got to be a little reminder that it's 2001, you know?
Right.
They go inside and there's a man yelling at the hotel clerk, saying, "Let me talk to the real manager, the white manager." So a racist guy screaming and being an asshole. While Steve Zahn is in there, they get service again on the CB radio. And so Paul Walker, you know, is when Steve Zahn comes back to the car, is like, "Oh my God, he's back. He's back. What do we do? What do we do?"
So to get back at this racist guy, Steve Zahn has the idea that they tell Rusty Nail to come meet Candy Cane in her hotel room, but they give Rusty Nail the room number of the racist guy.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. A double prank. And
a double prank.
A double prank, which you know how I feel about pranks.
Yeah,
a double prank. Bad. I feel doubly bad about.
Yep.
So cut to Paul and Steve in their hotel room a little bit later. And they hear a truck pull up.
They're giggling. Oh my God. Oh my God. He's coming. This is so funny. Hilarious prank. Although I will say Paul Walker is like more hesitant about it throughout. You can tell he kind of feels bad. Steve Zahn's really the one egging him on and being like, "Come on, dude. It's so funny. It's so fucking funny." And they had told Rusty Nail to bring pink champagne. And so we see the silhouette of a man walking up past their motel window. They're putting their ear against the wall to listen.
And it's storming out. There's this great shot of the two of them with their ears pressed to the wall. And in between them is a painting of a ship caught in a storm. Mm-hmm. And they turn all their lights off in the hotel.
For the vessel heads.
Mm-hmm. For the vessel heads. They have turned all their lights off, so the only thing really lighting them is lightning strikes. Mm-hmm. And the camera is pushing into this painting until the whole frame is just taken up by this boat in a storm, in a lightning storm, with actual lightning flashing outside to light up the painting. And you're hearing the muffled interaction of Rusty Nail and the racist neighboring hotel tenant.
And it's hard to hear, but you can tell it's not going well. I think you can pretty much make out the guy answering the door being like, "Who the hell are you?" And then it gets harder to hear. The storm's getting louder and things are getting muffled. But it sounds like it's going badly. Something, they're not giggling anymore. They're like, what's going on in there? And then it gets quiet. And so Paul Walker calls the front desk person to say like, "Oh, I heard a commotion essentially in the room next door. Can you guys, you might want to check." And so
they call next door. They hear the phone ring. And then their phone rings again, and it's super loud. It's a great little jump scare.
Mm-hmm.
And the manager says, somebody answered and said everything's fine.
So, phew.
Yeah.
Next morning, wake up. There's cops everywhere. There has been an incident overnight, and they are questioning Paul and Steve, saying, did you see anyone coming to the room next door to you? The man that was staying there is in the hospital. He's in a coma. They're denying it, and they're like, no, oh my God, like, what a huge surprise. This is so crazy. And you can see that Paul Walker is feeling more guilty and like wants to say something, but Steve Zahn is acting ignorant to this. And the cop has a very funny vibe where he's just like, I think it would be good for you guys to see the victim's body, which seems pretty crazy to do.
He's like highly suspicious of them.
Yeah. And so, I mean, it does work. He takes them to see the body and then they confess because the body has the bottom jaw ripped off. And so you just see the row of top teeth exposed. And it looks like too many teeth, but it's because you just don't usually see all of them at once.
Mm-hmm. Oh, no.
It like reminded me of Beetlejuice. Jesus. When they're pull out the mouth and there's way too many teeth now. Really don't like seeing all those teeth.
Ew. Mm-mm. Fuck.
Mm-mm. It's creepy.
And Steve Zahn has the perfect face to look shocked, his big wide eyes, just horrified by what he is seeing. And they confess. They're like, yeah, we did do a prank. And there's a truck driver that goes by Rusty Nail, blah, blah, blah. They tell them they're being questioned, but they don't get held for anything, right? They're just kind of scolded and let go.
There's an amazing scene with, I don't know this actor's real name, but he plays Ellsworth on Deadwood. Mm. Great actor, great character actor. And he plays like the town sheriff.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one scene where they're being reprimanded by him. And he is the only one that speaks. And he does this whole monologue about how they've caused a shitstorm for him. And it's like an old fashioned Western. If they're not out of Wyoming by sundown, he's coming after him. And it's just this like this one scene with him. That's the only time you see him. And it's just this hilarious monologue he gives him to get out.
So they leave. They hop in that car.
And then it's a rom-com again.
It's like everything's great. Fine.
Wow.
Fun music.
One thing we forgot is when Paul Walker decides to go pick up Fuller, his brother, Steve Zahn, he does a U-turn on the highway. And then he gets pulled over and he's trying to talk himself out of the ticket, that it was like a good deed scenario that made him do it. And the cop says, I'm also pulling you over because you have a broken taillight.
Mm-hmm. That's important. That's going to come back.
Yes. So as they're driving through that CB radio, we hear candy cane.
No.
Candy cane. And they answer. Obviously, Rusty Nail knows that they're fucking with him and asks them why they did it. They say it was a joke. And he says, well, then apologize.
This is the point where Paul Walker says he's a man. He does the candy cane voice, and then he changes into his real voice, and he says, that's me. I'm a guy.
It was a joke.
A
hilarious joke.
It was so funny. It feels insane that the cops didn't take their CB radio.
These cops
right?
don't know what
if
they're doing.
If it's like, this is how we communicate with the person who did this.
Yeah.
Would you like to communicate with, like, you know?
It is an interesting
response. Like, lock it up in the principal's office.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is an interesting response to just be like, all right, get back
out there.
Interesting
for them, too, to be like, we're going to keep it and we're going to talk to this fucking guy again.
Yeah, exactly. That's the main thing. It's like,
he ripped somebody's jaw.
Yeah.
But we'll chat. It's fine.
Yeah.
I think it's because they establish earlier that there's like a 5-mile radius on a CB radio, and I think they're just assuming that he's gone because he's a truck driver, so he's
scary,
out of range, you know.
Mm-hmm. So he tells them they have to apologize for what they've done, and Steve Zahn does not apologize, but instead yells at him, insults him, says, "We're not apologizing to you, you like pathetic loser," or something like that, which seems like a bad tactic.
He tells him to go see a psychiatrist.
Yeah, not the best response. I would have apologized. Mm-hmm. And Paul also, again, is saying like, "Just apologize, dude, apologize." He doesn't. Then Rusty Nails says, "You really ought to get that fixed."
"Get what fixed?"
"Your tail light."
Ooh. And there's like, it's dark and there's all these lights, car headlights behind them. Oh, baby.
Oh, I hate it. I hate it. I hate it.
Oh, chills. No.
So they are panicking now, driving. And wouldn't you know it, they're about out of gas. See a sign that the next town is in 73 miles. They're not going to make it. They're panicking. They pull off at the next exit. Happens to be a gas station right there. Really, thank God for that. But they're looking over their shoulder, seeing who's following them. Seems like they're maybe not being followed, but a couple minutes after they're pulling in, they're like trying to get gas as fast as they can. Paul Walker goes in to use the payphone to try to call the sheriff's department. And in pulls an ICE delivery truck. They're very tense.
It's kind of like a cube truck, not very big.
Yeah. Mm. And the driver of this truck comes out with a baseball bat. He like hits his own tires, throws the bat over his shoulder and struts into the store, the gas station store where
he kind of looks like Sam Elliott in A Star Is Born.
Yeah. Oh, great. Great. Love it.
He's looking very intimidating. Steve Zahn's trying to get Paul Walker's attention, being like, dude, like he's coming in there. He's coming in there. It's a very tense scene where Paul Walker kind of freezes as he can see the guy walking behind him in the mirror, and he's doesn't know if he should run or play it cool or what. And so he plays it cool and he goes to check out. But the guy's right behind him. We're not getting a good look at the guy really, but he's got a baseball bat over his shoulder, which doesn't feel good. Paul pays, runs out. They get into their car so fast, peel out, and we see the guy with the baseball bat run out, calling after them, and then getting into his truck and driving after them.
They miss the entrance to the highway. So they're on dirt roads in the dark, pitch black, and this ICE truck is chasing them. And they're driving, and then they hit a dead end with like an iron gate. And they're freaking out. The ICE truck pulls up behind them. You see the guy getting out. They're freaking out. And he walks up to the window of the car, and Steve Zahn makes like a little kid like gun with his fingers. And he's like, "We got a gun, man." And Sam Elliott from A Star Is Born knocks on the window with a credit card, and he goes, "And I got a MasterCard." So Lewis, Paul Walker, had forgotten his credit card at the gas station.
Wow, that is a committed stranger. Mm-hmm.
Good deed. Good man.
What a good deed. It's not also scary at all.
Like the, as they're fleeing from what they think is Rusty Nail, they crash through like a row of mailboxes. It's a very insane chase scene that the guy's just like, "Hey man, you forgot your credit card."
And they're like, "What is that bat?" And he's like, "Shit, my tire thumper."
Okay.
So then Sam Elliott leaves. Gets in his ICE truck, and he's slowly kind of backing out of this dirt road so he can make a U-turn and leave. Paul Walker and Steve Zahn are like getting out of the car and sighing a deep breath. And they're like, "What's that noise?" And at this point, the ICE truck is like perpendicular to them. as it's making its U-turn. And all of a sudden, the silhouette of the ice truck is getting brighter and brighter and brighter. And then a fucking semi-truck crashes through this ice truck. Ice explodes everywhere. This is all practical and awesome. And it's like honking loud as hell. The music picks up and they're like, oh, shit. And they're like scrambling to get back in their car. They floor it through this iron gate, break it open. And now they're in a chase even deeper on like the back roads with an 18-wheeler.
Great.
Who's honking his ass off at them. One thing I read about, or one thing in the commentary track on this that I learned, they replaced all the headlights with lights from airplanes. So lights are like bright as hell.
Holy shit.
Epic. They're driving, driving, driving. And eventually they lose control of their car and they end up next to like a big tree perpendicular to the semi. And so the semi slows down and starts to slowly just squash them into this like giant stumped tree that's never going to move. And so their car is like accordioning in and they're on the CB like screaming like, we're sorry, stop. And Rusty Nail gets on the thing and he's like, Sammy, do you remember?
He says, we apologize. Like, it was just a joke. We're sorry. And that is what Rusty Nail had asked them to do, is to apologize. And so he stops moving forward.
And he says, he's like, we were just messing with you. And Rusty Nail, I think, says, why? And then Steve Zahn says, like, it was just for a laugh. And then Rusty Nail says, well, I'm just playing with you, man.
Oh,
and slowly
my God.
Backs up.
Wow.
And then he leaves.
Then drives off. Yeah. And their car is wrecked. Like all the windows have shattered from the car getting crushed. So we see them the next day at a car repair shop. Pretty fast repair.
Mm-hmm.
But the car doesn't look great. I mean, it's gotten in a couple car accidents now. And they agree they're not going to tell Lily Sobieski. Her name is Venna in the movie. And
that's funny.
An interesting name that threw me at first. But by the end of the movie, I was like, Venna's a great name. I'm on board. So they agree not to tell her that this has happened because they don't want to freak her out. They're, you know, getting closer to picking her up. And they're like, let's maybe not tell her about the guy that's trying to potentially rip our bottom jaws off.
And they throw the CB radio out the window while they're driving on the highway.
Yep.
And they don't
and
tell
it's a rom-com again.
They don't tell the police.
Correct.
There was no answer at the sheriff's station when they called. And so, yeah, they don't make another attempt for some reason.
They tried once. Okay, yeah, rom-com tried. Again.
Yeah, music is fun. Now it's like college rom-com. We're in the college in Boulder and Venna walks out in like a silky paisley knee-length skirt that felt very 2001 to me and like a tank top. The style is very funny. But she's getting that slow motion like head to toe camera movement, and we see Steve Zahn is essentially like, oh gosh, she is hot, and she hugs them, and her friend Charlotte pulls up as she's leaving for summer break. It's summer break.
Yeah.
So Charlotte's going home too. Charlotte also hot. Steve Zahn's trying to convince her to get in with them. We can all road trip together. Charlotte says no, but you know, she's seems like she, I don't know, likes them and would have, but she's got a different place to go, I guess. So she does not join. So they just
and then they're off. Yep. The three of them are off.
Yep. Wait.
They stop. Go ahead.
I have in my notes that they're heading back to New Jersey. Is that correct?
Yes, I believe. His ticket at the beginning says Newark, the plane ticket.
Okay.
So that's, I don't think they ever really mention it otherwise, but that's my assumption.
Okay.
They have a long way to go. This is not a short ride.
Yeah.
So they end up at a motel.
First, they go to a dive bar, and it's in like a seedy town, and the guys there are being inappropriate with Venna. Some guy walks up, very aggressively hits on her. Paul Walker tries to intervene and says, like, come on, man, stop. And he's like, is this your bitch?
Yeah.
Like, you better shut your bitch up. And this whole scene is tough because then Steve Zahn's master plan to defuse the situation is to act like an abusive boyfriend also, and walks up to Venna like, I told you not to like talk to these guys. And he like aggressively grabs her and drags her out of the bar. And that settles everybody down. They're like, all right, well, as long as someone is screaming at her, we can back off. Real, real interesting scene. And Fuller is, Steve Zahn is very much hitting on Venna as well, which is really rude.
Yeah, that's not nice.
And now they go to the motel.
And Paul basically passes out, and then Steve goes to see Lily in her room. And they're about to kiss. Seems like that could happen. But then in Paul's room, the phone rings. And it's Rusty Nail on the phone.
Oh, God.
He says, now, I thought you said there was no girl.
And he's like, there is no girl. There's no girl. Rusty, there's no girl.
No.
Then what's she doing in the other room with your brother?
It kind of sounds like Lorne Michaels.
I'd love to see that version.
I guess Ted Levine wasn't brought in until post-production. They had like recorded it all with a different voice. So he came in later. So
it's a masterstroke of casting. Like, yeah, it's Ted really Levine great. Is unbelievable as Rusty Nail.
You know, who's to say we couldn't bring Lauren in for...
Who's to say?
Some reshoots. Yeah. We could get that version.
They're still not done reshooting this movie, so it's possible. So Paul runs over to the next room, and he's like, Rusty Nail's on the phone. And he says, what's he doing in the next room with Venna? And then Paul's like, which is a pretty fucking excellent question, by the way. And then they run out, get in the car, and flee. And what do they see on the road, Sammy?
They see... On some signs, they pass one sign that says, look, and then the next sign says, in the, and then the next sign says, trunk. And Steve Zahn is driving, I think, and he stops and says he wants us to look in the truck. And Paul Walker says, how do you know? And he says he wrote it on the street signs. Paul Walker's like, anybody could have written that. And then we see that on the sign that they are stopped in front of, it says Lewis. So it is indeed Rusty Nail who has graffitied these signs. Venna, by the way, has like no idea what the fuck is going on because they did not tell her about this. So she's being like, tell me, explain everything, what the fuck. And
there's a great line exchange that's probably in the trailer where she's in the hotel room when they're freaking out. And she says, well, how scared am I supposed to be? Mm-hmm. And there's a close up on Steve and he says, much more than usual.
Great line. That's a good line. That's a very good line.
So they walk around to the trunk of the car. They're scared to open it. Is it going to be a body? Is it a bomb? They're freaking out. And Lily steps up and is like, just fucking open it. I'll open it. She opens it. And it's the CB radio.
Taped back together.
Wow.
And on it, they hear Charlotte screaming for help.
Oh, no. Fuck. I really thought Charlotte. I was like, well, at least Charlotte got away.
I know. You really made a point to mention Charlotte. I was like,
I know.
But I didn't think it was going to be this.
I, in my notes, didn't take a note when we met her. I was like, well, that was weird. No.
Yeah, like, what a weird little scene.
Don't need to write that down. And then I was like, oh, God. Yes, we do. They plug the radio back in. They hear Charlotte screaming and they're begging Rusty Nail, please, Please stop. Please don't hurt her. We'll do anything. Anything you say. Mm. And what does he want them to do?
He wants them to go to a truck stop in broad daylight that has a restaurant full of people and families. And he wants Paul and Steve to get completely naked, go into the restaurant, and order 6 cheeseburgers each.
Okay, that's not that bad.
It's a good
of all the things it could be.
Pretty silly prank.
They
pretty
still have their prank. Jaws, so.
Yeah. Yeah, all things considered.
So they get
you want to describe this scene?
Yeah, they get completely yeah. naked. They're covering their bits with their hands, waddling towards the diner. There's a family that's filling up their tank, and the dad like shields the children's eyes and says, "Billy, sissy, get in the car." Oh, they get in the diner. Everyone is obviously staring at them, speechless. And Venna is staying in the car during this, keeping an eye out for any 18-wheelers that may approach. They order 12 cheeseburgers. The waitress is giving them a real dirty look, but also looking like she's going to serve them. But then the manager walks out and is like, "Gentlemen, what the hell are you doing? You need to get out of here." And they're like, "Please, sir, you don't understand. Someone's making us do this. We have to order 12 cheeseburgers." But they get kicked out.
Well, Venice starts honking.
Yes.
And so they run out. And she is talking to Rusty Nail. What does she want? Or what does he want? What does he tell her to do?
Rusty Nail comes over the CB radio and is basically just saying, "You have to do what I say." And they're just following any thing he tells them to do. And we hear Charlotte periodically screaming in the background, "Help me." So they are just following his instructions. And I think he just leads them to this cornfield. As we know, corn is the scariest crop. And we know bad things happen in cornfields. And it's nighttime now?
It is nighttime by the time they get to this cornfield, yeah.
Yeah.
And essentially, Rusty Nail shows up without the trailer attached to his truck, so he's pretty nimble.
Mm.
And he starts chasing them through the corn.
They get out on foot for some reason. Why do they do that? I can't remember. But they're, I guess, maybe just thinking that they can hide easier. I don't know. But he's able to easily see them moving through the corn because he's higher up and has his extremely bright airplane headlights. Mm-hmm. So any movement in the corn, he can see. So he is just plowing through, chasing them. I'm thinking
it's really good.
I'm thinking really we good. Need to stop running. But I could see how that would be a scary decision to make, because if yeah. he just happens to, you know, go in your direction, you're kind of fucked. And eventually they do stop, and it doesn't help.
There's a shot where they're like hiding. They duck down and hide in like an irrigation ditch that's maybe like 2 feet, 3 feet deep. And they're just like lying prone on their stomachs, and he drives over them. Like fast as hell. It's really, there's some amazing stunt work.
It's really a very thrilling scene. Also, I feel like, is it Steve Zahn that's just yelling, "Go, go, run, run, go, go," like constantly. And I think even Paul is like, "Yeah, thanks. Like, we fucking know."
Yeah. Paul Walker is an amazing on-screen runner. In this movie, I really learned to appreciate
wow.
it. He really uses his arms well. They're like very straight down with his fingers pointed at the ground. But he's like, according to the director's commentary, fast. John Dahl says he's a very fast guy.
Wow.
That is a gift, a real talent.
So they're crouching in this irrigation ditch, and the truck, I think it stops because it's gone over them and starts to reverse, and they scramble out into the corn again. But I think they split up, right?
Mm-hmm.
They end up kind of separated.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like whisper screaming. Lily Sobieski's like whisper screaming for help. to like try to find where they are. And Rusty Nail is like up on top of his truck, shining his spotlight around, playing this creepy music, right?
Mm-hmm.
And looking for them. And then the truck drives away after a few minutes and leaves. And they start calling out for each other at full volume. And Steve Zahn and Paul Walker end up next to each other, but Lily is gone. So he got her.
Oh, no.
And they run back to the car, which is on fire. Their car is in a like going up in flames. So they sprint back to it because they hear her screaming and there's a fire in the car, Lily. They run to the car, but it's the CB radio. And she's screaming through the CB radio. And they scream like, you let her go, let her go. And he tells them to meet him at a hotel in a town and bring pink champagne.
Room 17. Same room 17. Number.
Yep.
Ugh, and no.
And they grab there's a bottle of pink champagne in the burning car. They grab it and then the car explodes.
Jeez. So he also tells them, like, don't be a minute late. We got to meet us at midnight. Don't be a minute late. And they're now without a car in the middle of a cornfield. So they run to the nearest place. There's like a little bar or something in the, I don't know, nearby. And they need to steal a car. And Steve Zahn.
The Hotwire. Yep. Hotwire pickup truck.
Yep. And that's also a kind of stressful scene because a guy's walking out and they're like, is this the owner of this truck? And he keeps like walking towards them like, do you guys need help? I have some jumper cables. And they're like, no, it's fine. In the nick of time, the car starts. They peel out just as the actual owner of the truck comes out the front and is screaming, that's my car. But, you know, they got to do what they got to do. This is, I think.
Yeah. Circumstances
called
seem
for
to require.
So they go to the place that he told them to go, but there's like 7 motels and he didn't say which one. So they're going to every room 17. They're just going one by one, pounding on the doors, getting, you know, disturbing families and people that are just clearly not Rusty Nail. Meanwhile, we see Rusty Nail tying Venna up in a motel room, tying her to a chair, putting tape over her mouth and nailing the chair into the ground. And then he sets up a shotgun pointed at her with a little pulley string connected to the doorknob so that when someone opens this door, she will get shot in the face. I wrote here that I would be
holy shit
so mad if I were Venna. Be like, you motherfuckers pranked this guy and now I'm gonna die because you guys are just
immature. Anger is probably the primary emotion.
Yeah, she doesn't seem too mad. I mean, she's obviously scared, but I would be mad later, I guess, if I survived this. We'll see what happens.
So they realize that they forgot one motel. They see it across the street and make their way over there. They go into room 17 and it's empty. And then the phone rings and it's Rusty Nail. And he alludes back to basically what it was like listening through the wall when they told him to go to room 17 and they were just right next door. So they realize she's right next door.
Yes. There's like a line where Paul Walker on the phone with him is like, I'm not kidding. Where's Venna? And Rusty Nail says, you might not be kidding, but I am. Like, this is all just still a fun prank.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know why exactly they don't immediately.
I know. I'm trying to think.
Go to the room next door. But Steve Zahn instead. Paul Walker wants to keep Rusty Nail on the phone and have Steve Zahn like sneak around to surprise him. And Steve Zahn goes along the side of the motel to the back side of all the rooms and looks in and sees the contraption that is, you know, going to kill Venna if someone opens that door. But then Rusty Nail sees him. We get a look at Rusty Nail here, finally. It's not Ted Levine. Just a big scary dude.
You don't see him too clearly for too long ever, but you do see him here, yeah.
Yeah.
And he, like, doesn't he, like, crash through the window and grab Steve?
Yes. And pins him into, there's, like, a pipe wire thing sticking out. This little side alley behind the motel is, like, filled with nasty trash and, like, old tires and furniture.
Yeah, old mattresses, yeah.
And he gets pinned onto this old nasty little metal rod thing that stabs through his leg. Mm-hmm. So he's screaming in pain, and Paul Walker is coming to help him because he hears him, I think, and he runs to the front door to open it. And I think Steve Zahn sees that and is saying, like, don't open the door, don't open the door. So Paul Walker hears that. Thank God. Meanwhile, Venna is, she finds a little nail in the chair, pulls it out, and it seems like she's maybe going to be able to get herself out, but she drops it. Motherfucker, we're now seeing why he nailed this chair to the ground so she can't knock herself over, because she's needs to stay in this position where the gun is aiming at her. So she's
this is so stressful.
It's very stressful. She's trying to get out. Paul Walker runs to Steve Zahn. Is Rusty Nail just kind of disappeared for now? I think he might be gone.
He puts Steve in a headlock. And he's holding Steve Zahn's head through the window into the room. And he, when Paul's about to open the door, and he says, "Watch this! It's gonna be hilarious." And then Steve frees himself, falls back onto a pipe, and screams, "Don't open the door! Don't open the door!" So,
yep.
Paul's running around the house, or sorry, the side of the hotel.
Yep.
And Rusty Nail is gone.
Mm-hmm. And
there's all these alternate endings that are screwing me up.
And
Rusty Nail's gone. Yeah, go ahead.
And Paul immediately goes to Steve Zahn, and I guess he doesn't know the situation with Lily, but I was in my mind thinking Lily needs your attention more than Steve.
But Steve, at this point, isn't he hanging on a fence?
Yes.
And he's got a pipe through his leg that Rusty Nail has bent now, so it's like a hook that can't come out.
Yes, I mean, they both need help, and he can't be in two places at once, but I thought he should have at least peeked in on Lily before committing himself to this situation, because the cops have now arrived, because Rusty Nail earlier called the cops and said, "I'd like to report some dead bodies," and just hung up. So the cops are arriving and find the hotel manager dead. And they are going one by one down the row of motel rooms, knocking, saying police, and then opening the doors, checking each of the rooms.
Kicking the doors open. And every time they kick a door open, it sounds like a fucking shotgun goes off. Like the sound effect is just like,
oh my God.
And meanwhile, in front of Steve Zahn is a field. He's hanging with his back to the hotel, and there's just a big open field behind it. And we see Rusty Nail's truck turn on and start coming like full speed towards Steve Zahn as he's hanging on this fence.
No.
And so Paul's trying to help him off, and it just cross cuts between the two of them, like getting sped at by this truck and stuck on this fence with these cops kicking these doors in. And like the cameras just keep showing you the room number and like Lily Sobieski's face, like looking to the side, like the direction they're coming from. It is so suspenseful. Oh, man.
Holy shit.
Ooh, it's stressful. And he goes in and gets Lily first, right? Because then the cops bust in and he like gets her just in time.
He knocks her over.
He knocks her.
And the shotgun goes off into the ceiling.
Yes. And so the cops are there, guns drawn, telling them to freeze while he's hearing Steve Zahn screaming more. And he just is kind of like, I'm sorry, I gotta go out there, runs from the cops.
Don't shoot.
And would you believe it? They don't. So he's able to save his brother.
And there's a bunch of cops in the back at this point, because I think Paul Walker like tells them to go out there. That's where he is. And he convinces the cops to shoot the truck because it won't stop. So there's all these cops shooting into the windshield of the truck as it's coming in on them. He pulls Steve Zahn off at the last second out of the way, and the truck goes through the fence and into the hotel. And like at full speed, they built this. The hotel is just a set. Like that's all on a stage.
Yeah.
And they drove a fucking truck through it. It's so cool.
Wow.
Yeah. It's a real close call. But they made it. And they open the door to the truck and see a dead guy that's been shot a bunch of times. And Charlotte
is in the back.
Yeah, tied up.
Yeah.
But alive, because she's at she's in the foot of the passenger seat. So she wasn't like sitting upright. She was laid down, basically. So we did it, folks. He's dead. Charlotte is saved. Everyone is still alive except for our bad guy. And there's, you know, paramedics now on site. They're taken to the back of an ambulance, breathing big sighs of relief. And pretty quickly, I feel like the cops come up and they ask if they got an ID on Rusty Nail. Like, who is this guy that's been doing this?
Off the body.
Yeah. And they tell them, yeah, we got confirmation. He's some ice truck driver that delivers ice. So we know that ain't him. That's our ice truck driver from earlier I guess he just held on to that body, which
Sam Elliott.
And then the CB radio in the ambulance comes Rusty Nail's voice. And I can't remember what he says.
He talks about how it's going to rain. And he says, I love the rain. Keeps everyone inside. Washes everything clean. Cut to black.
That's the end of the movie.
Wow. I mean, that's a great ending. Sounds like they picked the right one.
It's a good ending.
Yeah.
Wow.
It's apparently I want to hear about the other endings, but I did read that it's the only one where Rusty Nail survives, that he dies in all the other versions.
Which it's scarier to keep him alive.
I know. I feel like you always want to keep the threat there. There is a Joyride 2 and a Joyride 3. I have not seen them, but
neither have I.
I presume they're probably pretty bad.
I believe they were straight to video.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, what are some of the other versions, Marty?
The most drastic alternate ending is basically starts from the truck stop where they're naked.
Mm-hmm.
And Rusty Nail like comes into that parking lot in his truck and they chase him out of there. You see Paul Walker sprinting buck naked, which is pretty fun for like a while. And
ooh, I love that. I'm tempted to make a, well, I guess it didn't make the movie, so I couldn't do this, but I feel like that makes me want to make a letterboxed list of movies where that happens. I'm picturing Red Rocket. Simon Rex runs
yeah
full naked for a while as well, and it's a
Midsummer.
Yes. Yeah. See, yeah. There's, you know, at least a couple that could be added to this list. Let us know in the comments.
Subgenre.
Yeah.
Long story short, they end up getting arrested for fighting with the locals. They get into a cop car. Venna gets taken by Rusty Nail. They steal the cop car, Lewis or Paul Walker and Steve Zahn.
Mm-hmm.
The cop who's driving the cop car is played by Walton Goggins.
I saw that he's on the IMDb, but it's like, yeah, deleted scene. Yep.
And then essentially the climax of that version takes place in the cornfield. And they used some of the footage, but Steve Zahn is actually dressed as a state trooper because they like pull Rusty Nail over at one point and get Venna out of the back of the truck. But there's just like basically a similar version of the cornfield chase that ends with Rusty Nail pushing on accident, pushing like a big propane tank that's in this cornfield. And then he's like speeding toward them. And this thing is like rolling in front of the truck and they end up shooting the propane tank and it explodes. So it's like this huge epic ending in this cornfield that is not in the movie. And there's like 25 minutes leading up to it, basically, that is not in the movie.
That's wild. The wasted amount of money and budget must be pretty high for this movie. You don't often hear about like 4 or 5 alternate endings.
Yeah, and a whole big like explosion stunt that they just don't use. It's crazy.
I think based on John Dahl's commentary track, my understanding is that it sort of came from the test screenings, like the reactions to the original cuts.
Mm-hmm.
It's not bad. Like, it's not as good as the real one. The sequence where the doors are getting kicked in.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah, it's the best.
Yeah.
And then the other versions are just like slight variations, essentially, on the current ending. Different ways Rusty Nail is killed. All of the other versions that take place at the hotel originally had Charlotte like dead on the bed when they got in there. Mm-hmm. And they decided that that was just like unnecessarily grim.
Good.
So I like that she
lives. You don't often hear about a movie choosing not to kill a
college-aged
sort of
woman.
Bonus female character. Yeah.
Yeah. But so I love good. That this movie kind of rides, they know when to not take it too far for the most part, and it keeps it just this sort of fun thriller as opposed to something too dark.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I like this ending.
I like this movie.
Yeah, we were saying I do think you could handle it. It's it's quite stressful, but it's a good time. I think it's a good
time. And the two of them are just so good in it, and Steve Zahn is so funny in it that
I love him.
We kind of kept joking like it becomes a rom-com again, but even those parts of the movie are a pretty good movie.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It is really fun to like dip in and out of the stress.
And yeah,
I love that.
We love a movie where the moral is pranks are bad.
Don't prank.
Don't prank.
We could all
prank.
Stand to learn that lesson.
Yep. Henley also agrees with that lesson, but she had to go.
We did this again. I feel like we'll occasionally someone will have to leave and the listeners will think that they're just shocked into silence for the last third of the movie. So I'm sorry we forgot to say, but Henley did have to go. But she does agree that pranks are bad. We can say that with certainty.
Just for the record. Yep. For the record. Thank you so much, Marty. An excellent recap. I had no doubts.
Thank you so much. This was such a delight.
Thank you, Marty. Freaking best.
One more time. You're the freaking best. Tell our listeners where they can find Physical Therapy, a movie podcast.
Absolutely. Right now it is on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. We have released 3 episodes and our next one will be out Friday. And it's going to be a horror movie.
Oh, my God.
We're going to do... This is an exclusive, guys. Nobody knows this.
Oh, my God. Give us the scoop, Marty.
We're going to do the 1988 version of The Blob.
Ooh.
Ooh, cool.
A very fun, very gross...
Hell yeah.
...remake Great. Of the
We've never done The Blob.
Classic.
No, we haven't. That... sounds amazing. Everybody go check out Physical Therapy. What's your Instagram handle?
PT Movie Pod.
give them a follow.
PT Movie Pod.
Subscribe. All that good
stuff.
We'd
love to have you.
Marty rules.
Hell yeah.
And yeah, we close each episode with a voice from the movie. I'm going to do a Rusty Nail voice and say, from all of us here at Too Scary Didn't Watch, goodbye.
Very good. Very scary. We did it. We made it. Thank you all for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch.
If you enjoy the show, please remember to subscribe and rate us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. 5 stars only, or we will haunt you.
And if you simply can't get enough of us, we have good news for you. We have lots of bonus content available on our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast.
You'll get access to video trailer reactions, 2 bonus episodes a month, the power to vote for upcoming episodes, and more.
And last but not least, you can follow us on social media at TSDW podcast.
We'll be back next week with a new episode.
We love you.
That was a HeadGum Podcast.